Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and this is your last weekend to catch the Julie Marichu show at the Whitney. The Washington Post described it as monumental. The last day of the show, titled simply Julie Marichu, is Sunday, August 8th. The show takes up the fifth floor of the Whitney, and it features 70 of the artist's works, often large-scale paintings, enormous actually, works layered with imagery and meaning, frequently using source material like photographs from current events such as the California wildfires, the killing of Michael Brown, and political upheaval like the Arab Spring. This survey encompasses more than two decades, and it reveals Marichu's range as an artist and her way of processing real-world events. Artist Glenn Ligon said of her work, "Julie is the painter I turn to when I want to think about how to trouble the line between abstraction and figuration, between local and global concerns, between painterly restraint and joyous abandon. She's a history painter and an Afrofuturist at the same time." The show was co-curated by the Whitney's Rejeko Hockley and LACMA's Christine Kim, both of whom first came to know Marichu's work when she was an artist in residence at the Studio Museum in Harlem in 2000, after moving to New York City in 1999. Before that, Marichu received her MFA from RISD in 1997. She'd been interested in art since her childhood in Michigan, where she grew up after her parents emigrated from Ethiopia, where she was born in 1970. We spoke to Marichu when the show opened, and I began the interview by asking her about the scale of her work.
Well, the scale came, I started to work on the scale really because I wanted there to be this kind of the ability to kind of come very close to the painting and experience the detail in the painting, but then have a very different experience as you were to walk away from the painting. So you have these very different kinds of physical realities of the painting, and it becomes a very kind of almost cinematic, time-based experience where you move through the painting, and through that movement, you experience it at these different tenors and these different types of realities that are happening in the painting. But then you step back, and it becomes a very, very different kind of picture. It all coalesces into something else. And so it allows for that form of the multitude of experiences in that way that I was super interested in.
Have you watched people do that in the galleries?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think like the earlier paintings that were that I started to work with at that scale have a lot of tiny detail in them, and they're about that fracturing of space and the kind of multi-perspectival kind of experience one can have in that. But then with the more recent paintings that are also quite large, there's a lot more bold color, and it's a lot more, they're bigger gestures. And then there's a very different type of experience that happens in the detail, which is more in terms of how it's the paint and the material physically manifests. So it's a different kind of detail experience. And it's really interesting to see how people engage with that very differently.
What are the challenges of working this way?
I think the challenges are space, like getting the appropriate space, and and the time that they take. I mean, the paintings that at the scale take a lot longer to make. But over the years, I think I've gotten gotten faster, and I've been able to end the gesture, and I've gotten much looser and more confident in working, And working on the scale has been somewhat, you know, working on a smaller scale has been the bigger challenge. it's been interesting to kind of go into, and recently my paintings, the work I'm doing right now are smaller in scale. And my last show with Marion Goodman, the more recent paintings were also smaller in scale, 6 feet by 8 feet. So much smaller when you compare them to the scale of the works, like a 12 foot by 15 foot painting, which is the most recent work in the Whitney exhibition.
That's interesting you use the word confident, because as you became more confident, and I don't want to take you to a bad place, but what happens for you as a painter when you're not feeling confident? What does that feel like? How do you work through that through a piece?
Well, I think like a young artist is, a very, very young artist are learning to finding and mining a language, right? And I think so much of being a very, very early artist or trying to find a way to make art is there's a lot of mimicry and a lot of a lot of trying to find a way, trying to see how. And there's a lot of making paintings that you think are paintings, or making artwork that you think feels or seems like an artwork. But invention and actually finding a way to do that is really complicated, and it's difficult and it takes time. And I think once you find something that feels resonant and that you can find a language to work with, at least for me, it felt like at the beginning there were, like, I had a lot of questions, and the evolution of that was it just happens more slowly. And creation, I think, does happen slowly. It takes time, especially in painting. Painting is slow, and there's this way that evolution, you know, as you become more and more connected to that and working with intuition, the more and more you hone that sense. I mean, working 15 years ago, I feel very different than working now, you know, 25 years later, from some of the earliest works in the show. And you can, I think, really see that in the way that the marks are made. And so, I don't know. I mean, for me, it was always, there's always a thrilling kind of investigation in painting and in making and in trying to build a new step. And when that thrilling experience happens, when something else occurs, that's what one goes after constantly, I think. And whether you're more confident in finding ways to do that or when you're just emerging, I think it's still searching and trying to find that thrilling moment that something else has taken place or something new has happened.
My guest is Julie Maritou. Her mid-career survey at the Whitney Museum of American Art is up right now. So many pieces of the show have mapping, sort of these ghost maps in a way behind, and or landscape design plans subtly in the background. What is interesting to you about using cartography?
I first came into cartography more kind of conceptually, because I was interested in, like, how you try to really make sense of space and place, and then try to, and then there's this way to try and study something that's almost unstudiable. Like, I felt like, you know, for me, the most potent place of creative work was it was intuition, and working with chance and intuition and being able, and then in order to try and understand that, I tried to use the cartography and the language of kind of Cartesian knowledge in a way to try and make sense of what I was doing, as absurd as that sounds. And it kind of feels that way. But yeah, so for me, I think mapping is a way of trying to make sense of something. And it became a way also to visualize almost things that that are impossible to visualize. We tend to think of weather, and we somehow understand the way weather works through the imaginary of the weather maps we see on television, for example. You know, like things like that. Like, I think it became this way to be able to playfully investigate things that felt much more complicated to think about.
Your work often is responding to, or feels like a response anyway, to real world events. And I'm curious how you choose to use news events as source material, but not necessarily have that event become the primary focus of the work.
Yeah. So for me, I think, like, early on, I was using news events and not just and current events and trying to make sense of something that was happening or that we were experiencing collectively through thinking of the kind of infrastructure of those images. And then in the last 4 or 5 years, I became much more interested in the blurred image and the not what was recognizable in an image, but what could be palpable in the image, which was a visceral experience from the kind of ghosts of that image. And so what would inform the painting or a point of departure for me was the images I became attracted to or were interested in were the most haunting, I think, of different events. So if it was like the rally to the right in Charlottesville, I blurred one of those images, even the blur was subliminally picked up on the kind of fear that was instilled by the reality of that kind of action. And for me, it's that palpable blurred kind of abstract image that is not that feeling is not something that is that one can necessarily give massive language to. It's hard to explain. It's hard to describe what happens when the feeling of something that is about that's embedded in the subconscious and that's embedded in the kind of knowledge of historical truths and realities, and it's embedded in your daily experience as a person of color in this country. And so when you have this experience as a Black person, you come up with, like, up against the kind of fear that's reinstilled by that, and that palpable sense of of how do you get there. There isn't really language for that. But what I'm interested in investigating in the painting is how, in this blurred image and the kind of haunting image that comes up from there, what else can be mined and what else can kind of evolve in that painting, which is also about some form of other type of invention. And within that other type of invention, which I try to like build on very intuitively, there's this visceral experience that happens at the end, which is informed by that experience and the time, but also becomes this other reality or this other possibility. And it's in that other possibility that there's a form of liberation of, and kind of, for me, that's, it's when this new image emerges that's as haunting and as enlivening as I can, like that thrills me, that becomes something that I feel like, oh, this is something else. And that's what I think I was really interested in with like trying to mine these current events and how they impact us on a visceral, in a visceral way, like in a deep visceral way.
Yeah, I think a good example for listeners, if you get out your smartphone right now and Google Conjured Parts Eye Ferguson 2016, you may have seen this picture for folks who were Times subscribers. It was one of the photos that was in the profile of Julie Mereau. And the painting is about the killing of Michael Brown. And it's this blending of purples and salmons and blacks and greens. And there may be some glimpses of human forms, maybe. I was really interested in, as I went to the Whitney and I saw it, and I sat in front of it for a long time, and I was really interested in your color choices for this piece. And you know, I thought, is it like a bruise? You know, there's no like red, blue of police siren. I mean, I was just very curious about it.
Well, so the photo I ended up blurring there was a black and white photograph, and it was a photo of, like many that we saw of those of that event, where it's a unarmed person with their arms raised, and mm-hmm. it's a nighttime photo. There's the lights of these stores on fire behind him, and there's the lights mm-hmm. of the police and which in militarized gear facing him, and that whole thing becomes blurred. But what becomes really beautiful in the blurred photo is it almost looks like this crucifixion. And yet there's this mm-hmm. emergent kind of form in the center that almost feels not like a crucifixion, but it has this emergent light behind almost this crucified figure in the blurred image. And I just started to work into that image and was really interested in how do you work into the darks and lights. And I was working with white and black paint. And then mm-hmm. I started to work with this airbrush paint. And to me, there's this weird thing that happens in nighttime photos where you get, and the nighttime is where you get this kind of surge of colors that are coming from really weird sources. And they can be like, you know, neon signs or whatever, and can be, it can kind of inform something. But I started to work with that fuchsia and this kind of verdant green and I think what I was really, I don't know what, you know, like I said, it's very intuitive, that process. It's something you can't really give language to. But this emergent kind of all-seeing eye from the center kind of becomes mm-hmm. this presence in this painting, and it became that what occurred in that gesture and in that eye felt to me what was kind of, where was this going, and to me there was something in that that was just profound, and I felt like I just left the painting at that. It's weird because I go back to that painting and now I think like I could take away some more marks at points, you know, it's mm-hmm. pretty finished.
I'm interested in who will be seeing this work, because this was just at the High in Atlanta, I believe, and it's headed to the Walker in Minneapolis. Now, Atlanta is where Rashard Brooks was killed by police, Minneapolis, where George Floyd was killed. How do you feel about your work, about these horrors showing in cities that have been recently roiled by them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and you know, there's other work also shown in the Whitney. Like I think the last painting, Facing the Hudson, and you know, thinking about kind of our critical immigration crisis mm-hmm. that we're dealing with, and I think that, you know, my hope and the way that I try to think about making and working is that we have lived through and continue to live through these atrocities and this violence. It's a constant daily state of existence as a person of color and as a black person or as any citizen really in that way and in this country. But that daily reality that we are living through is part, there's also the constant insistence on being, on finding joy, on finding invention, and on finding possibility. And I think that my hope is that there's this kind of engagement within that where we can try to move elsewhere and we can try to find and invent a different way of being free. And hopefully that's the experience that can happen with art, and that's the experience that it can happen when somebody's in front of the painting. I think it's a really interesting time right now because of the pandemic and because of the quarantines and shutdowns, that it is a limited audience. Like this show at the Whitney is really going to be for a New York audience. It's not an international audience as it would be at a different time when you have a very different tourist community in the city and a lot of Europeans and places, people from, so it's really a New York audience. And at first that can feel disappointing. You're 25% capacity. You don't get the kind of normal audience you could have at another time. But what I think is an opportune time for that is, how deep can you delve into that New York community? Who else who don't normally come to museums? How can we really engage that audience? How can we bring people in? Because what kind of power can art and abstraction have right now?
The show Julie Maritou will be at the Whitney until this Sunday, August 8th. But if you can't make it, there's another chance to see her work. She has work on display at the gallery Gemini GEL at Joni Weil at 535 West 24th Street. That is up until September 18th. This is all of it.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.